Hello, welcome to the catch up to Channel Bob Hawke. If your boss makes you go to work today, he's a bum. Because, why? I mean, this happened yesterday. Everyone's favourite horse got up.
Horsey McHorseface is coming. Horsey McHorseface and the big dreamer, Horsey. Horsey McHorseface.
And the nation is jubilant.
Just,
you know?
Just remind me, what was that story? It was Bodie McBoatface,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Bodie McBoatface.
They're naming a new British vessel. Bodie McBoatface, the name won by a landslide.
So and they wouldn't do it.
Four drunk blokes have bought. Yeah. You know where that race was? It was at Cessnock.
Cessnock, yeah.
So they bought a horse.
We should talk to the owner of Horsey McHorse.
How did you name that horse?
Ooh, we should talk to the name, the owner of Horsey McHorse face.
I'll find it out.
See if we'll give away. Oh, hang on. Yeah,
what?
Right,
look, give away what?
A part of part ownership. Imagine we gave away part of.
Oh, look, I'd be happy with the horse's blanket.
I just want to know how many beers they had when they named
on it.
How many beers did you have, mate?
Plenty of that. That was good fun. Marta got some advice on how to give his lovely wife Kath a wedding anniversary present. That was actually
did you
helpful.
Actually take any of it on board?
He does.
The big thing I took home was some bloke spent $8,000 on his missus.
That was only 10 years.
Well, that's if it doesn't drive, you don't spend $8,000. If it doesn't got four-wheel drive.
Now, the PM, Rich Uncle Mal, he was on rocking Stefan's needle. You've got to be careful about what context you say that in.
Absolutely. Plenty in the catch-up. Enjoy yourself.
Marto, Ed and Robin, lifting podcasting to new heights. Well, they're giving it a crack. Might need a hand from Height for Hire's reliable fleet of booms and scissor lifts. 1-800-heightforhire.com.au.
Ah, there it is. The national anthem means that it's time to talk to the most powerful man in the nation. Direct from Point Piper, it's Rich Uncle Mal, the PM. Good morning, Rich Uncle Mal.
Good morning to you, Ed, and hello to you, Marto, Robin and young Brendo as well. I've just been enjoying some natural yoga with some chair seats to keep me regular, so I'm ready for the day.
Well, thank question
you,
one.
Sir. Thank you, sir.
Jackie Lambie has been accused of inappropriate behaviour by former staff, taking them, I don't want to say this, but sex toy shopping and talking about sex in the workplace.
Well, listen, Ed, I've always had a lot of time for the Senator from Tasmania. She's a good, hard-working person who has the best interests of her constituents at heart. Now, I think it's sour grapes when former staffers say she walked around the office saying, and I quote,
"No,
I'm dying for a root."
Oh, dear.
Now, that language is florid and rural, but she's not Robinson Crusoe there, is she? I mean, it's a basic human right. But when it comes to sex toys, I wouldn't really know much about that. Me and Lucy keep it very organic. Very organic. By which I mean we might reach for the crisper rather than a trip to sexy land.
Mal, there was a report on the ABC that Cape York leader and Indigenous activist Noel Pearson called you a rather rude word, one of the rudest ones.
Oh, no.
A very rude word. And we won't be going there, will we? No. Noel and I work closely together on a number of vital issues for Indigenous communities, and he uses very robust language, as I do. I've got a temper, and in the heat of the moment, I've been known to call someone a poo head. I've even been known to slap my clipboard down on the desk and say, "Well, bloody bugger." So, I mean, if you live in a glass mansion in Point Piper, you can't really throw stones, can you?
No.
I can get jolly baity at times.
I guess you can. And what else has been happening in the world of the PM?
Well, Robbo, in the past week, I've taken a selfie with the girls from St. Catharines, normal, lovely children enjoying a terrific private school education. Get your children into a private school. Yes. Let them enjoy life with influential friends. I've spoken to Dan Coates, the director of the National Intelligence in the U.S. Yes. National Intelligence. He must have an easy job because they are a bunch of dumb. I wish Noel Pearson was here to finish that sentence for me. I recently turned a sod on a project, a road project in Western Sydney, and I'd never picked up a shovel before, and it was a strange feeling. My hands were very sore, and Lucy had to moisturise for me afterwards.
Just before we let you go, Rich Uncle Mal, you normally got a little song stuck in your head. What is
it
today?
I've got a real kick in my step this week, Ed, and I've been listening to the Billy Joel Best Of on the Bentley Selector.
Goodness.
And I like this one. Anthony works in the grocery store, saving his pennies for someday. Mama Leone left a note on the door. She said, "Sonny, move out of the country. Working too hard can give me a heart attack. You ought to know by now." Let's jump to the chorus.
Yes.
"It seems such a waste of time. If that's what it's all about. If that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
Rich Chuckle-Mell, the PM.
Before I go, I just want to say the Triple M rocks Stefan's needle. Good on you, Stefan.
Does it ever.
Get up there.
Marto, there is a heap of pressure on you, man, and I don't even think you realise at the moment.
I'd rather just keep this to myself and just carry on if you
wouldn't
mind.
Well, yeah, no, that doesn't work. Yeah, no, because you have a significant anniversary, which has just come on the back of a significant birthday for your wife, and you were sitting there reading out loud the types of presents that is potentially for a 25th wedding anniversary. And I'm sorry, but if you're going with them, I need to intervene.
Have you heard what some of these people suggest on the internet? Toast one another with champagne. It's a 25th wedding anniversary. You're supposed to give silver.
Mm-hmm.
What's a silver paperweight?
Don't you dare.
But that's one of the suggestions
here. No, and that is a stupid suggestion.
Plan a picnic with paper, silver-covered, coloured plates and cups. Who are these people?
Well, that's lovely, but then what do you give as a gift?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. And
what else is there? Don't
rings?
Yes.
Is that silly?
No. Diamonds?
Oh, no, not diamonds. I didn't say anywhere here about 25th. That's just silver.
You're not going to give her just a silver band.
Why not?
Because that's...
My beautiful wife does whinge a lot about not having enough rings. Because what happens, there seems to be... You brought it up the other day about these push rings, Ed.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, you get it for pushing a baby out. Like, that's just what happens in life. Like,
no.
No, you don't award rings for that. See, there's too many people out there showing me up.
Yes, you do.
Cass received three rings in her wife, her engagement ring, her wedding ring. I think she's lost that. And one when she turned 40.
Right. You got out of it
enough.
For the 50? No, it's not.
I haven't got any.
She who dies with the most jewellery wins.
Right?
She who dies with the most jewellery wins.
Is that a saying?
That's a good saying.
It is now.
It's not a good saying. Well, what do you win?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Wow.
You just do it. And she's got a daughter. Like, if you're not going to do it for your wife, which you should, then do it for Hillary, because, Hillary will get them once.
What do you do with rings? The world of rings doesn't really interest
me.
But you've been reading those Diamonds International. That's sort of, I just started a twig that sounded, they sounded like they're a good price.
Let's get some suggestions.
But why rings? Why not? Is there something else?
What do you mean?
Like, she's got a decent car
a
for the first time in her life. Well, not a paperweight, but is there something else, like a little boat or something?
A boat. Oh, I don't know. A whippersnapper.
Just a little tinny, like a silver-coloured tinny.
Oh, some crab pots. Yeah. But let's coat them in silver.
They did them in silver. Crab pots.
Oh, they did crab pots.
Ed, you are not helping.
Because I don't know. I'm open to suggestion here.
Yeah, he's only an early starter. He's only been going a year or so.
Yeah, but he's lovely to his wife, Tiff.
Know,
and
isn't
if she wanted something,
see, don't
he
hold
would
him up
buy
as
it.
The example.
Yes.
He's too nice.
She just gets whatever she wants.
Probably. See? Yeah. See?
That's
you are the right type of husband. Right there.
That's how we run our life. We get Tiff gets what she wants, and every now and again I get to have a burger. So 1-333.
Is that what you call it?
What a lie. Yeah,
exactly. It's not a euphemism. We need some suggestions.
It doesn't have to be rings. Like, it'll probably end up being a ring, but it doesn't have to be.
So Marto needs help.
What else do you get on that?
What do you get? What do you get someone for a significant milestone? Okay, here we go. Here's some help from Sharon from Karina. Give Marto some advice, please, Sharon.
Morning, Marto.
Hi, Sharon.
My great-grandmother got given a ring on her 25th wedding anniversary from my great-grandfather.
Oh.
It's been passed down through my great-grandfather to my grandmother and to my mum, and it'll come to me when I reach 25 years of marriage.
See, Kath, my wife won't get that. Are you the only girl?
I am, in my family.
Yeah. See, my wife is one of the youngest of six daughters, so
but
she doesn't get anything.
But how many daughters have you got, Marto?
I see. So start it now.
Yeah, clever.
Yeah. It's a tradition, a family tradition.
Kath, I'd love that. That's really good, Sharon, because then there's some heart behind it. Like, you're not only thinking of your wife, you're thinking of your daughter.
That's a good one. How many rings do you own, Sharon?
I have my wedding ring and my engagement ring.
Oh, you're a two-ringer.
And we had our daughters, we had them at 24 weeks, and my eldest one passed away. And my husband bought me a special ring to give to my daughter when she reaches her 21st as a present to her from
very special
her sister.
Sharon, I got a little tear. I love you. Good on you.
That's
Thanks for calling, nice. Sharon. Oh. That's lovely. He's actually listening to you, Sharon. That's awesome.
Wow.
Jeff of Mount Cravat, got any ideas?
I do. Mate, I usually agree with you wholeheartedly, man, but you are so far off the mark.
I get a lot of pressure. What are you talking about? About the ring and stuff? Like, I just don't believe in them.
Stuff, mate. You know what? I've just had my 10th wedding anniversary, and my wife, I bought her a ring, and she asked for one about 2 years ago. I started planning. I've got the stone. We used some gold that is family heirloom gold. I've had it done, and all up, it's cost me about $8,000, but you know what? The way I look at it is that eventually my daughter, who's now 9, will get a ring that was her mother's.
I didn't think of this.
Has gold from great-grandmother and great-great-grandmother in it.
This is family.
So it is. It is. It's super family. And look, you know what? She's the mother of my children, and I love her extremely. And she's a good reciprocator as far as gifts go. So that's a good thing too.
Well done, buddy.
That's good.
Wow.
Well played. Here we go.
Jeff's amazing. Well, you know what I said? Because Kath lost one of her rings. So I've only ever bought her 3 rings. Lost, I think, the wedding ring. I said, well, if you can't look after them, you're not getting another ring.
Who are you, Papa Smurf?
This is what happens in my house. How am I still married?
I don't know. She deserves a medal. Mark
a
of Deegan.
I'm going to get one of these. Unless Mark's got a good umbrella or something.
Mark, help.
you do, mate. Hey, mate, women love flowers, or generally they do. My wife does. And for our 25th wedding anniversary, I got her a rose, and they dip it in silver, like pure silver.
What, a real rose? That's a rose nice. That grew out of the ground?
A real rose that come off a bush. It was 12 inches long, and they dip the whole thing in silver. Jeez. And
that's
a good mix
precious.
Of the two. Yeah, it's not the only thing to get her. You've got to get her something else as well. But, she loves it. She loves it.
You get them both. You get them both of those things. That's a great idea. So you get a ring and a long stem rose that's dipped in silver. And then if you don't want to get that, maybe just get her a grill, like a wrapper.
Oh, yeah. A silver one.
No.
Yeah, silver grill with diamonds
in
it.
You were doing so well.
Oh, I thought you meant like a George Foreman grill.
Yeah, I don't know. Like a grill for a mouth. No, like a mouth. Like a grill for a mouth.
Oh, like a wrapper.
Like a wrapper. Or right a big goblet like Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, goblet.
No.
No.
All right, it's going to be a goblet.
Marto Ed and Robin, it's the new Triple M. Goblet.
Goblet. Goblet.
A beautiful picture of a young Brizzy girl is on the front page of the Courier Mail, and she appears to be the third Australian victim caught up in the terrorist attacks in London. We have Seb Costello from Channel 9 with us. Hey, Seb.
Hey, Robin. This is becoming a really urgent situation with Sarah Zelenak, the 21-year-old. You referred to Brizzy girl, moved to London to become an au pair or a nanny. And I can tell you, we spoke to her mother yesterday. The mother's beside herself, understandably, because she hasn't heard from Sarah since the Saturday night. So that's now almost 48 hours ago.
Seb, surely there's CCTV of the bridge from all those buildings. There's so many tall buildings around it.
Police will have a lot of vision that they're working through. Fortunately, the incident went for about 8 minutes, so hopefully that makes it easier for them. We know that Sarah was on the bridge, but she'd become separated from her friends. But look, this is why this is such an urgent situation, guys. We're talking about a 21-year-old girl who hasn't accessed her Facebook page or hasn't used her mobile phone for 2 days. I mean that in all seriousness. You know how clued in people are these days.
Yep.
So that's why the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade officials, our foreign officials, are madly searching hospital rooms across the city to try and identify this young woman.
Do they think that maybe she's gone into the Thames?
Yeah, well, that's a possibility. At the moment, the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade is working closely with Sarah's mother, and she hasn't been given any sort of information, any suggestion of a lead from DFAT. Of course, they do keep that stuff close to their chest, so that's not to say that they're nowhere in the investigation. But that's certainly one of the possibilities.
I know, Julie Wallace, if you are listening, her mother, we really feel for you, and you got a flight. She's about to hop on a flight this morning, mate. So I hope that all turns out okay. Where else have they gotten to with the whole affair over there?
Yeah, well, quite an extraordinary move by the Metropolitan Police here in London just in the last hour or so, Marto. They have published the photos and the names of two of the three attackers here themselves. Usually there might be something left to the media, but the Metro Police asked the media to hold off so they could do it themselves. They are a man by the name of Khurram Butt, 27 years old, and was involved in this attack from Pakistan, and then a slightly older man of a Libyan or Moroccan background. His name is Rashid Radawan. So their photos are now widely available. But guys, this attack is changing the face of London. I'm standing on Westminster Bridge, which is where that man in March conducted a similar terror attack, mounting the curb in a car, ran people down. They have now, in the last 24 hours, erected pedestrian-protecting fences on Westminster Bridge, and it's happened on two other bridges around town too. So they're now physically taking measures to prevent situations where people drive cars up onto a footpath for the purpose of mowing people down.
So they'll be the only footpaths anyone will get, want to go on from now on, the bollard ones.
The bollard ones.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Seb Costello, a Channel 9 correspondent in London on Channel 9. You can see all of his updates throughout the day. Thanks, Seb.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks, Robin. Thanks, Marto.
I'm really interested to get your opinion on this, guys, because French government have brought in a creed as of the 1st of January 2017 with businesses that are over 50 employees now have to look at ways that if they expect or anticipate that their staff will be working out of hours, so they're having to do business overseas, so they've got to be talking to someone in America at a different time slot than the work hours, that they then do something to give that time in lieu.
As, or emails, or
anything,
working on emails,
anything,
or a proposal for the next
anything.
Week.
Anything. But what's important about this is that they're actually now saying the French government are deeming that people need downtime and they need to turn off their electronics and they need to turn off their contacts. And for big companies, they're now being made accountable. So they're looking at things like, do you get time in lieu? Or do you put up different priorities in terms of, is it absolutely necessary that you speak to that person or email that person or get a response within that time frame? And because it's coming out of the government, like, it's actually going to change the way that companies are doing business.
You said it started in January. Is anything, have they gauged how it's going?
No, because not yet. They're just, it's still being filtered out. I think businesses have up to 12 months to actually implement the changes.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting. And we were kind of discussing this before we came on air because it depends on what job you do. Like in breakfast radio, I reckon we're on all the time. You know, we're required to be across what's going on in the media. I mean, my goodness, Ed, for have you been paying attention? How much, you must just spend your life on Google.
Well, we just luckily because of this job, we have to read all the newspapers every day. So you just pick
just keep
up,
reading
that's
all day.
It is. That's what you end up doing. But you're right. We're not our job is not the type of job where you, after you leave, you just sort of leave it and nothing else happens. And I'd be interested to know if there were jobs that were like that, Marto. If there are jobs where you just do your job, then you go home from your job and you don't think about it again, or you don't have to do anything again until the next time you're there.
I believe that if you've got a job where you actually do something, like you actually create something or make something.
Like
you,
a tradie.
You're able to like a tradie, yeah. Like you turn around, you've done your week, or you, let's say a bricklayer. Wow, I did all that. I'd laid those 400 blocks today. What a day's work. I go home and I don't think about it until I come back the next morning. We have a quick meeting going, righto, we've got to go a little wall, nib wall there, then we've got to go there again.
Okay, do those tradies have to order the bricks, sort out the timesheets?
They have a boss. So he'd think about it. So one guy, let's say there's a crew of, well, let's go with brickies. There's a crew of brickies. So four of the blokes, they would not think about their work the moment they jumped into their truck or the moment they cleaned the mud off their hands. They would not think about their job until they get back the next morning, apart from making some lunch. But there'd be a boss who would have to go, well, listen, I've got to meet with the builder. There's a lot of people who don't think about work at all after work's finished. I think there are.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear if there were people that did, because I can't imagine that. I can't imagine a situation where it's like, and then just pick that up where it was before.
What about nurses? They clock on, and particularly if they're working in hospitals, do they then clock off at the end of it? Or what, teachers? Oh, my God, those poor people.
Brownie from Browns Plains, what do you do, and can you leave it there?
Good morning, guys. I am a property maintenance officer at a boys' college in South Brisbane.
No, you can't ever leave work.
It's done. I get here around about 7 o'clock for a kickoff. Mate, Bundy on, repair everything, install everything, and mate, she's gone at 3 o'clock. Over and done.
Hold on, but you don't give it a second thought. What about if something stuffs up the electricity? Yeah, there's electrical fault or a blockage in one of the pipes, which can happen at schools.
Mate, we have a thing called a supervisor here that takes care of all that.
Ah,
here.
Okay. Are you at, you're at Churchy, yeah?
No, I'm not. No, I'm at another boys' college.
Okay.
So,
doesn't matter.
I was going to say, because their grounds look absolutely superb and you are doing an excellent job, Brownie. But there you go. Thank you.
You pay enough money, you get nice grass.
Scott of Chermside, what is the job? Can you leave your work at work?
No, I'm on my way to work now. I'm a teacher, and I got home at about 9 o'clock last night after we finished the exams and stuff ready, so absolutely, definitely not.
What were you at school doing that post-kid prep?
Yeah, well, we coach sport after school, so I'm at a high school, so we coach sport, and that finishes about 5:30. And then rather than do the traffic run, I normally stay at school and do some work until, you know, 8:30 or so. On not every night, but some nights, yeah.
What's on at the moment? Is this marking exam papers?
Getting ready for exams, yeah. 11 and 12 start exams next Wednesday, so, yeah.
Our boys have started this week. Yeah, it's exam block. So
the teachers that don't coach any sport, they can go straight bugger off straight home, I suppose.
There'd be very few teachers who didn't do something after school that was sport or music or some sort of after-school activity. There'd be a very, very, very few who would beat students out the gate.
Yeah, right.
The other thing that amazes me with you guys is that on weekends, and I mean, you know, I'm at a lot of sporting venues, but the principal's there, the head of curriculum's there.
They care.
There is this expectation that, you know, that you have to be at those events even if you're not the coach. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah, and also I think the more you put into the life of the school, the more you get out of it in the classroom. So if kids see you having an interest in putting in, then they're more likely to put in the classroom as well.
You know, we're talking about private school teachers have to work on weekend with sport. I don't think state school teachers, they don't do sport on the weekends. So you get paid, you know, private school teachers get paid more. Would that be worth it, Scott?
We actually get paid less.
Private school teachers?
Yeah, we actually get the state teachers get paid more than we do. And sport on the weekend is what they call honorary and voluntary. Where you might get paid $500 to do a sport for a term. By the time you put in your hours after school and fuel going to and from, there's no, it's 20 cents an hour, I think it's what worked out. So, yeah.
Right, okay.
Oh, God.
Good on you, Scotty. Oh. Thanks, buddy. Jackie from Birkdale. Jackie, your job, are you able just to leave it after you go home?
Might just head to Matthew from Yarrabilba there,
Matthew,
brother.
Sorry, mate. Yes, Matthew, are you able to just leave your job when you go home?
Yeah, I'm a disability care officer and I look after people. And the first few years, you kind of hold on to everything. You know, you're thinking about your clients and you're always worrying about, you know, what they're doing when you're not on shift. But once you get a really good rapport with your teammates and your co-workers, you kind of can leave it at home and have a good home life with your family.
I mean, it's a nice thing that you do anyway, Matthew. Yeah, the job that you've chosen is a wonderful thing to do for people.
Thanks.
Good on you, buddy. But isn't it interesting, with those sort of jobs, it's a choice as to whether you care and think about it. But there's also all those jobs like teachers where there is an absolute expectation. And, of course, they don't get time in lieu.
Yeah. What about Joe from Pafuni Grove? There's another angle. We've got to keep moving on. But he drives trucks and buses and he says he clocks off work and doesn't even think about work until gets there again.
Scott is from Northlake. Scott, have you got a job where you can just leave it there, buddy?
Yeah, certainly do. RACQ Patrol, Breakdown Patrol.
Oh, you guys are the best.
You're the best. I wish you were a family member of mine, Scott.
So what happens? You do your job, you respond to all the calls, you fix everyone up, you are the angel of the road, and then you go home and you don't have to worry?
Yeah, that's it. You pretty much, leave it at home, but you probably say you leave it at the side of the road and move on to your next one.
Let me ask you this, Scott, side question. When you rock up to a job and it's a flat tyre and there's a man standing there and he can't change a flat tyre. No, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Is there any part of you that judges him, Scott?
Oh, of course.
Oh, don't be like that. Don't be like that.
Well done, Scott. Correct answer.
There are reasons. You know, you get the guys that are in their suits on their way to an interview or something. You know, don't expect them to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Scott, what's a bad day for you? If you're having a bad day at work, what's gone on?
Probably rain.
Fair enough.
Rain brings a bad day.
Does that mean everyone leaves their lights on, then the battery goes flat, and then you're busy?
Yeah, that's it. And flat tyres in the rain, kind of,
Hey, make sure everyone at work knows we love you.
Yeah, we think you're awesome.
All of you blokes.
Great work, Scotty.
Cheers, mate. What about Dave from Logan? Dave, what's the job?
I drive a tow truck.
Ooh.
In brackets.
No. I'm one of the good guys.
One of the good ones. Yeah, we know that. There's plenty of them.
We predominantly do a lot of breakdowns with RACQ and that as well. So we help them guys out, get people off the road.
But when you're not working, you don't have to think about it.
Sometimes, sometimes you're on call. You might not get a phone call all night, which is good. You get to sleep. Right through, but other times, you may get a call 10, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning.
You got to do what you got to do, I suppose. You know, like, you think about it, if it was one of your relatives or a family member, you'd like them off the road straight away and safe and stuff.
Dave, why have you guys got such a bad reputation?
We don't. I don't.
No, but the industry.
I work for a good company. I suppose you get a lot of sharks with probably any jobs, you know, that you come about. I'm not sure, you know, like, I've never worked for anybody else.
Well, Channel 9 did that story, and that pointed you all out in a very bad light. It was only two companies, wasn't it?
Yeah, but yeah. Like, the company I work for is, most of our customers are RACQ, breakdowns, insurance jobs, things like that. People want containers moved, you know. We give a good price. We don't say you have to take this. They ring us back and we get the job, obviously, because we're professional at what we do. We do it the proper way, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Dave. There's good and bad in every profession. And to be fair to the French, they do need to get home early. I mean, they've got affairs to have. They've got to try and hook up with their teacher.
They've got wine to drink.
Exactly right.
Thank you, Robin. Marto, Ed and Robin. New Triple M.
There's a lot of bad news around Robin at the moment. And every now and again, you find a little bit of lightness to enjoy yourself. And
this
had me out of my chair during the news last night, because I can't... Romato and I talk about this. I don't know if we've done it with you. When horses become celebrities, you know, when people start wearing...
McCovey Diva?
Yeah, people start wearing the outfits of... People start talking about...
That day I saw people with caps on, young men, 23-year-old men on a plane going to Melbourne to look at Winks. They were going to the races to see Winks.
Okay. People write books about horses. Sometimes I just think it's a bit stupid.
The mighty Farlap. It's been happening forever, though.
Yeah, it has.
But I think I finally found a horse I can get behind when I heard this on the news.
He's become known as the people's horse, and today, Horsey McHorseface has broken through for his maiden win.
Oh, have you got the race call of that?
Here he comes. Here we go.
Horsey McHorseface is coming. Horsey McHorseface and the big dreamer, Horsey. Horsey McHorseface. Horsey.
Man, I don't you reckon that race caller would have looked at his rundown of horses and he'd have to call and go, really?
Yeah, he's so hoping Horsey McHorseface doesn't get up, but he has. Someone we can believe in, Horsey McHorseface.
Do you have a tenner on?
I'm going to. From now on, that's it. Yeah. I'm going to get a tattoo. I'm going to get a little beanie. The whole
tattoo.
Bit.
Love it.
Horsey McHorseface is coming. Horsey McHorseface and the big dreamer, Horsey. Horsey McHorseface.
We've heard from all of the callers. Marto and Robin, you guys have been bombarded over the last 24 hours of people sending you photographs of their dogs
adorable.
In jackets.
Absolutely adorable and completely necessary.
They are nice, the photos in jackets. Yeah.
Cute.
But is it necessary? Dr. Kate Morris is a vet from Green Cross Vets in Morayfield. Dr. Kate, lovely to have you with us. You're going to settle this once and for all. Do dogs need winter coats?
Oh, that's a pretty tricky one, guys. I guess there's two sides of the story to that. Essentially, from a vet perspective, I think probably not, depending on the circumstances.
Thank you.
However,
you've got a merchandise department.
Hang on, give us the however.
I am pretty partial to a pug and a tutu, I've got to admit. So,
thank you. That'll do.
Stop it. I have a greyhound, Kate, and she comes and wakes me in the middle of the night and she's shaking. She's so cold if her jacket isn't on.
Putting it on.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, on that side of things, definitely from a veterinary perspective, I would say, yes, she does need some kind of jacket or jammies, we like to call it around here.
Kate, what about just leaving a blanket and the dogs seem to be able to pull that over them if they are cold?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'd be pretty impressed if a dog can pull it over. I have seen some good YouTube clips of them doing that, obviously. I guess what we've got to remember is that when we say jackets, I guess that's probably a better term to use because that's what we're applying to these guys. But dogs actually have a coat, an inbuilt one, which is their fur, basically. So I think other things to remember is that, you know, your dog obviously is acclimatized to certain conditions. So if you've got a thin-skinned dog with a very, very short coat, like Robin's greyhound, obviously, then, yes, they're probably going to need a jacket in the cooler sort of climate.
Thank you.
But can you just tell me, the dogs have... Kate, just talk about it technically. The dogs have an outer coat of hair, but there's also an inner coat underneath that, isn't there?
Yeah, sure. Depending on the breed, obviously. But, yeah, most will have sort of two coats, through there. But dogs are very good at obviously keeping themselves warm to some degree. If you've got a dog that's completely outside, lived outside all their life, something like, say, a Labrador, they're not going to need a jacket in this weather, even though it is quite cool, as opposed to maybe if you had a Shih Tzu inside that's been clipped back and they lived inside all the time, then, yeah, they're probably going to need a jacket because they're not used to being outside all the time.
Kate, so. I subtly picked up on what you're saying. If you've got a Labrador, i.e. a good dog, then it won't need a coat.
Oh, I didn't say
but
that.
If you, no, you did. And if you've got a rubbish dog, like a Shih Tzu, then you need to put a coat on to hide it.
No!
I wasn't saying that at all, but certainly if you had a border collie, you'd be flaunting it everywhere, I would say.
That's so, right, yeah. You would. You'd be marching it down the main
Kate,
street.
Kate, what sort of dog you got?
Oh, I've got three, actually. I've got a border collie, a Labrador cross border collie, and a Mastiff cross ridgeback.
What's in your dog? What's in your dog's wardrobes? How many coats?
They only have one each.
They have one each.
They are outside dogs, though. So one does feel the cold more than others. The other two don't tend to wear this, but I felt guilty only buying it for one. Obviously, you've got to spread the love evenly with your people.
Okay, so which one has the tutu?
I don't have any tutus myself, but I'm just saying they're very cute. I think it's important to remember that it's fun to dress them up, but it's not something that they need to be wearing all the time, obviously, because you can cause problems like overheating.
That's true. Dr. Kate Morris from Green Cross Vets in Morayfield, the final word on dogs and coats. Thank you for your time.
Not a problem. Thanks, guys.
Last Wednesday at the State of Origin, I witnessed something amazing. I knew the security would be beefed up. I got there actually pretty early. There was a bit of a fence around and they did a little bit more serious bag checking. I didn't have a bag. But for everyone, it was quite a weird situation. And, you know, I do know Hawley, the guy who runs Cap Security. I didn't want to, I don't want to bag them. But I was asked to remove, I had a onesie on. My son had it in his first Origin campaign. He had a Maroons onesie on. We were asked to expose our underwear. We were asked if we had clothes underneath our onesie, and then a female security guard made us undo our buttons and check to see what we were wearing underneath. That is outrageous as far as I'm concerned. I'm wondering where the next thing is. I can't believe you can check people's underwear because that's just beyond belief. We all go to stadiums a fair bit with football. And I've got Tony Loughran, who's a terrorism expert and security expert around this stuff. Tony, could you tell us where are we going to have to go to combat all these threats?
Well, to be honest with you, if you look at the way things have happened back in the UK, there's a couple of things that come out to that spring to mind. One of them is quite a major one, and it's stopping people getting back in at the end of the game. I mean, that was just a classic where the terrorists looked at the gap, the opening where people are coming out, and all of a sudden just decided to exploit it by just getting in through the doors. So that's one thing that I think that they're definitely going to be beefing up on. But the other one really is the actual perimeter check itself being pushed out beyond the actual stadium. So you can't actually get close to the build-up, right, I should say, of the individuals.
That'd be so problematic if you're dropping children to concerts, for example, like with what happened in Manchester.
Yeah, Manchester's quite a difficult kind of scenario because the streets and everything else like that are really, really tight around Manchester. So there'll be a different kind of playing game on that one. I think that what you'll see is, certainly in UK and other areas around Europe as well, is a beefing up and a hardening of this thing that we call internment, where people will be taken off the streets, really, that are potentially suspected as being involved in some attacks.
Well, speaking about that, and Tony, you worked with the BBC for many, many years.
Yeah.
You also, your company, ZeroRiskInternational.com, is the company that you run now. As someone who's worked in and around the terrorism space and in around the media space, I was shocked to learn that one of the terrorists who did this most recent attack was in a Channel 4 documentary less than a year ago, unveiling an ISIS flag in a public park in London, and was allowed to go back home and continue about his ways.
Yeah, it doesn't shock me in some respects. I know I'll try and explain this, because that guy in particular probably was a person of interest, a POI, and it's just exactly how the UK government now are putting resources into actually following the POIs, because there are so many of them, which I've been informed about the other day. One case that sticks in my mind, which I was involved in, was Stansted hijacking, where the plane came in from Afghanistan. Yeah. It had potentially a couple of Taliban on the plane seeking asylum or seeking whatever. And one of the guys who was arrested for hijacking that plane ended up as a baggage handler in Heathrow. Go figure.
Whoa.
Holy hell.
Oh, my goodness. So, Tony, you heard Theresa May, the British Prime Minister, speak a little bit tough.
Tony, bring it back to us. Bring it back to events that are going to happen in Brisbane or things that are going on in our local space. Do you think we'll end up with the tighter security that's happening in London Are we at that much of a risk?
You're living in a land of milk and honey. Australia is just an incredible place to live. But the thing is that we haven't really been touched by a specific major event like this. And I think that what's happening is the government are watching quite closely just exactly what is going on with stadiums around the world and trying to adopt that particular kind of profile. I do think there will be an increase in technology around stadiums. I think that that's been kind of wanting in the past anyway. But I think also there'll be other kind of measures such as clandestine operators in the crowds milling around having a look for individuals of suspicion.
And Tony, can I just ask you, Marto was very upset that he got his underwear looked at by a security person going into a stadium. As a security person yourself, do you think that's a good or a bad thing?
Well, it depends what kind of underwear he had on, to be honest with you. I think that...
no underwear. That's the problem.
Well, it depends really what the intelligence was on the day, and this sounds really kind of serious, but did somebody actually say that you know, something could be secreted on somebody pretty quickly? Or
Tony,
whatever?
I said, why are you doing this? And she said one word, Manchester. I went, are you kidding?
No way, really. No. That's like a reaction for something. And it sounds like what's happened is that somebody at the control room, whatever, said, "No, we need to do this. We need to do this," blah, 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 without actually kind of going through the real proper procedures. Yeah. Because you know, you could, it's like you said, you can actually get proper magnometers. You get proper checks anyway with wands and so on and so forth before you get through there. You don't have to do the invasion of the undies. Yeah. That's for sure.
Thanks, Tone.
No problem.
Can we change pace a little bit? Yeah, we have Gordy on yesterday. Mm-hmm. We were talking to him about other things, but he's reached out a little bit further rather than just attacking Wayne Bennett, which he's got a wonderful feud.
He does like doing that.
Oh, well, he's got a friendly feud, and he knows that he's the only person that calls Wayne Bennett out, so he may as well, you know, make that
continue.
One of his things. Now he's gone Paul Green, former Wynnum Manly boy, but also former assistant coach of the Origin team, and I reckon he's well within his rights, Gordy Tallis, to say to Paul Green, pull your head in when it comes to Origin, because he's trying to stop. See this bloke here? His name's Cohen Hess, okay? Mm-hmm. He's 20 years of age. He's the future of State of Origin.
Is he one of ours or one of theirs?
No, he's one of ours. He's a North Queensland Cowboy. All right, so that bloke there, he's a monster. Ed, is he any good?
He's fantastic.
Yeah. Problem is, he's only 20. So Paul Green, the coach of the Cowboys, regarding Cowboys' self-interest, is going, no, he's not ready for Origin. No.
Why does he have any say in that?
Well, he shouldn't, and that's what Gordy's telling him to butt out, mate. And Gordy's actually pulled Paul Green up. Paul Green didn't play Origin, but he's a wonderful bloke and coach, assistant coach of Origin at Origin level. Must be a wonderful coach. But he's pulled him up and he said, mate, stop just thinking of your club. You should have enough respect for what playing for Queensland means. It is the highest honour in rugby league to play for Queensland in State of Origin. He's going, leave it alone. Because he's going, this bloke hasn't played enough footy. Can I read a couple of stats out to you all?
Please.
This bloke, Cohen Hess, has played 22 games of NRL. He's going, he's not ready. Matt Scott, 14 games of NRL before he got picked for Origin. That's in the toughest position on the field. Tatey, 14 games of Origin. That's less. Cam Smith, 18 games. Jacob Lilliman, 19 games. And the great Greg Inglis, 22 games as well.
Can I throw one more at you?
Yes, please.
4 games for the Gold Coast Seagulls was Ben Eichen. 4 games for the Gold Coast Seagulls. Before he played Origin.
Well done, Gordon Tallis. Keep going.
Yeah. So hang on. Is it because he's young then?
Yes. But Marto and I both believe in if you're good enough, you're old enough. And
that is a famous old saying, and it is so true. You never know whether you're going to cope. It's the same with Test rugby when you go from playing for Queensland and New South Wales up to playing against the All Blacks. You never know when you start club football, it's slower. Everything comes at you that fraction of a second faster. There's no way you can train for it. You find out whether anyone can play Origin by playing Origin.
And you know who the youngest Origin player to ever play was?
Brad Fittler or Eichen?
Ben Eichen.
Well, that's who Ben...
That's what I'm saying. Mm. So if he only played 4 games for the Seagulls and he was the youngest player, then that doesn't work.
And it was the Seagulls, which is like basically working at a pokey lounge and then throwing a ball around.
Marto, Ed and Robin.
Well done, Gordy.
It is the new Triple M.